There's a thousand pretty women waiting out there. They're all living the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to the Katz Report on the radio. This is John Katzlamitas. I write the Katz Report on the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly, lasvegassun.com, lasvegasweekly.com. I write for all the titles in Greenspun Media Group, including The Sunday, the news magazine that comes out on the Sunday, except on the occasions you find it on the Saturday and sometimes on the Monday. Joining me this week is a famous showgirl in Las Vegas. She's a good friend of mine. She's one of the stars of 50 Shades, the parody at Windows Showroom at Bally's. The show is an adaptation of 50 Shades of Grey, the book franchise that set the country on its ear. The show runs nightly at 9:30 p.m. and is Dark Mondays. And here to talk all about that and all about her literary prowess is the one, the only, Maren Wade. M-Dub, thanks for coming back in.
Well, hello. Thanks for having me back.
I know. I very well remember your first appearance on the show. I co-hosted at the time with Trish McCrone. It was called Cats with a Dish.
Uh-huh.
And I think, refresh my memory, if you would, on this point, you hitchhiked, I think, to the studio.
I ended up having to hitchhike for about a half a mile, the last half a mile of my commute, because I was borrowing a stick shift car that I should never have been driving to begin with, because I'm not very good at stick shift. And when I couldn't find the place, I pretty much ditched the car and then walked on foot. And it was the middle of summer. It was pretty hot.
I remember the whole thing. Yeah, you parked over by the Thomas and Mack Center.
I did.
Something?
That's exactly where I did. And then it's far. It is very far on foot. I learned.
You walked in here and it was like we had to figure out the logistics of how you were going to get home.
Yeah,
how you're going to get back.
What
to
I was going
to
do with this car.
The car was illegally parked. I think it was technically had been reported stolen.
No, it did. Yeah, in the end it did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was worried about the damages. I didn't know how. I think I had to replace the clutch.
Well, you probably did, because you know what a clutch is now. When
I
you
do
have
know
to replace
now.
One, you know what it is.
It was a learning experience.
Anyway, that was about 3 years ago, about?
About three now.
You were not writing the column at that time.
I was not.
Okay, well, let's talk. We'll get into the column here in a moment, folks. That'll be a little wet your whistle for the second half of the show. But I want to talk first about you in 50 Shades,
mm-hmm.
a parody. 50 Shades, the parody.
It is also a parody.
A parody. And what we have here, ladies and gentlemen, I saw the show this week for the first time with Maren in it, and it's a parody of a book that is a parody of itself, right? It's a double parody.
Well, it is surprising when you find out that the book actually isn't intended to be a parody, because you just can't see it any other way.
Well, we were talking about this after the show the other night, and you reminded me or told me that a lot of the script, the lines, the funny lines, the hit lines in the show are taken straight from the book, right?
Some, I would say, the most awkward lines that end up being funny for their awkwardness are the ones that come from the book. Now, I mean, the show itself was written by a gifted group of writers, all in the Second City comedy circuit,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and so surprisingly, I always say that this show is so much better than the brand itself, because it actually is very cleverly written,
right.
Amazingly directed,
mm-hmm.
and there's a science behind everything that we do. I mean, these rehearsals are not easy. There is a science behind every rhythm of every line and the comedy, mm-hmm. of it all. So it is very funny and ironic that a parody about a book that is notorious for not intending to be a parody. Stay with me, people. that the show could be so successful.
Right. You play Anastasia Steele.
I do.
The love interest.
It's funny. I'm getting all territorial over that name, Anastasia Steele, because I follow 50 Shades of Grey, the Facebook page, just mm-hmm. because sometimes I like to tag things now that I'm in the show. And they were showing Dakota Johnson as Anastasia Steele. And wait a second. I'm Anastasia Steele. Hold on. It's like a whole different world now.
You don't want to carry it too far, though. There you might have some tendencies that will creep in subconsciously in that character over time.
It's pretty embarrassing. Yeah, those aren't really tendencies that you want to carry into your real life.
You
I get put
careful.
In some pretty compromising situations.
Yeah. If you find yourself wearing anything studded or handcuffed to anything unusual or handcuffed to anything, period, maybe you need a break.
Maybe. Just maybe.
Give me an example, Maren Wade, of a line or a couple lines maybe from the book that have transferred to the show that you're talking about. I'm interested in what, if you could recite.
Well, one of the big lines is when Christian Grey says, "Laters, baby." That is really sad. That That is a real line that he says over and over and over again.
If there were a D-bag glossary, that term would be in it.
Laters,
baby.
I don't know. And I would be so curious to be in the writer's room, if there was one, for her when she wrote that. Because what I would like to know what she was thinking.
I would too, and you're dead right about the writing in the the book in the show comparable to the book itself. I mean, you do get the feeling that a great deal of thought and dexterity went into the script of this show.
It really did, and what's interesting is there's two different humors even in the show that go back and forth. There's kind of the really fun physical humor that people can kind of look at and get a laugh, but then there's also some really clever lines, and some clever comedy that you know doesn't always land every night if people aren't paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting to see sometimes the audiences that get it and hear it, and the ones that don't. But I would even say, you know, when I first saw the show, and we actually saw it together for the first time when I was not in it.
That's right.
And
that's right. We did go together. I'd forgotten that part. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I remember enjoying the show, but there was a lot of humor I missed the first time around. And being able to study the script and do it and work with Al Samuels, who's our head writer and director, I learned a lot more. And I really, really started to appreciate the brilliance of the comedy.
The difference between the show I saw this week and the show that we saw together was the show that we saw together had that time stamp of 69 minutes, and they had audio problems in the middle of that show where they had to knock it down. So the timing was off and the show stopped. It was not, in my view, speaking for myself,
yes,
it was not ready to be rolled out in a premiere that night.
Yeah, unfortunately, it had a very bad luck that night. But since then, you know, we're a year and a half in, and everything has been worked out. And it's just everything is tried and true and tested. And honestly, every night those laughs, like we just see audiences literally. They're crying so hard. They're laughing so hard that they're crying. And I hear the funniest remarks when people leave the theater. I mean, I don't even know if I can say it. But I have people who are just like, I laughed so hard that, can I say that? Or I guess you could edit it out. I laughed so hard that I peed a little.
Oh, you can say
stuff
that.
Like that. And then every
that's
time
a blurb
I,
for your
and then I
50
I know
shades
you're right
billboards.
And then no the billboard yeah and then I hear them say and then I say I actually have to tell them, you know, that's not the first time I've heard that.
Nice. All right, Mary, we're going to take a quick break here so we could hear from Josh Bell. Josh Bell Hates Everything will be up shortly with his review of the new releases this week. They include Pop Star Never Stop Stopping and Me Before You, so stick around. I know we will.
First of all, this is an 18,000 seat arena. Nobody sells this out. You sold 15,000 seats. That's still really good.
No, it's not good. Hammerleg sold this place out last week.
Well, Aquaspin agrees with you. They're concerned about ticket sales.
What? But it's an 18,000 seat place. Nobody sells that out.
Hammerleg did last week.
That's Andy Samberg as pop star Connor For Real and Tim Meadows as his manager in Pop Star Never Stop, Never Stopping. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. This parody of pop music documentaries was written and directed by comedy troupe The Lonely Island, the Saturday Night Live veterans responsible for comedic pop songs like I Just Had Sex and Dick in a Box. Not surprisingly, then, the songs are catchy and creative, but the main joke gets stretched thin over feature length, with a bare-bones story and a lot of mild humor from celebrity guest stars. Pop Star is rarely boring and never irritating or offensive, but it's also rarely all that funny. I give Pop Star Never Stop, Never Stopping 2.5 stars out of 5. Also opening this week is the romantic drama Me Before You, based on the best-selling novel by Jojo Moyes.
Paris. Place Dauphine, right by the Pont Neuf.
So let's go. We could get on the Eurostar right now.
Nah.
But you just said.
You don't get it, Clark. I want to be in Paris as me.
Game of Thrones' Emilia Clarke tries way too hard as Louisa, a working-class young woman who falls in love with Sam Claflin's Will, the wealthy quadriplegic and former playboy she's hired to take care of. The romance takes far too long to get going, and Clark's overstated performance is more exhausting than endearing. Despite engaging briefly with serious issues, Me Before You doesn't reach very far below the surface or make any lasting impact. I give Me Before You 2.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. This is John Katzlamitas with the Katz Report on the radio. Joining me this week and sitting across from me in this studio is Maren Wade, co-star of 50 Shades, the musical parody. No, 50 Shades, the parody. Right?
It's both.
It's both. 50 Shades, the parody.
Yes. Okay. That's the official Vegas name.
They don't have
but a
musical.
But it is a musical. Okay. It is a musical.
The title is 50 Shades, the parody. The description is 50 Shades, the musical parody. Because
yes.
There's a lot of singing in it.
There
great
is
vocals,
singing.
By the way, in this show. Great talent in this show.
Yeah, tons of amazing
singers.
That's
not being flippant. There's some serious singing going on in this show, led by you.
Oh, thank you.
In the role of Anastasia Steele. great talent. You know, I was impressed when I saw the show this week of Paul Mattingly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have someone who, I'll just say it's Chris Farley-esque physique and disposition on stage in the role of Christian Grey, who in the book and in the movie we know is a very fit, debonair,
well,
James
we're not
Bondish kind of guy, right? Or supposed to
yes.
be.
Yes. Well, we're not actually really supposed to... I'm not supposed to talk about who the Christian Grey character is, although he is very interesting, and it is one of the big surprises of the show.
even though I'm looking at the 50 Shades website and it lists Paul Mattingly,
yes,
as
but does it list him as?
Let me see here.
anything. but you know the truth is.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't realize this. oh, so that's oh, you guys are playing. You guys are pulling an Absinthe where people who are in the show aren't supposed to be like really known. Is that what's going on here? Everybody else can be known, right?
Some people, yeah.
Maren
some people
Wade
can,
is,
I
can
be
known.
Known.
Sabrina.
I mean, you kind of already spoiled it, but I will say, I love working with Paul.
Let's be honest; he's a brilliant actor. He's a great improv guy.
He's a great
Paul.
Improv guy.
Yeah, he's a great. I've seen him in a number of things,
but he's also a really great actor.
He is,
and it's really mm-hmm. fun to see the different layers to him.
Come on, let's give credit where it's due. Paul
yes.
Mattingly does a great job on the show.
No, he does.
I'm not
he really
skirt the issue.
Yeah, no.
I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but still,
you don't have to skirt the issue because he doesn't wear a skirt.
I'm not skirting anything.
That's no,
for
he's
our
really
Frank Marino
great.
Show. Anyway.
And you know one of the really unique things about the show is that you know I love working with him. It's super easy. It's super fun. Every day is a laugh. And the whole cast in general, I've never really been. I mean, it's such amazing situation where everybody gets along so well,
mm-hmm.
and we are all laughing together all the time.
Yeah, it's you know I go back to how much script recitation and memorization has to be enacted in this show. There's a lot. And those types of shows usually don't really sell well in Las
mm-hmm,
Vegas. But
mm-hmm.
you guys, you're doing well. The show works well. And can you talk about just the process of having to learn all that and be able to sing in the show and be funny? I mean, that must have taken a lot of work, not just for you, but for everybody.
No, you know, it really did. I mean, the thing that attracted me to this show, you know, and you know, with my column and Confessions of a Showgirl,
mm-hmm.
comedy.
We'll get to it, don't worry.
Yeah, no, but comedy has been something I have been really, really attracted to in the last few years. And when I got the opportunity to play this role, what I find so interesting is the science of comedy with this show. So, mm-hmm. yes, I mean, don't get me wrong, the music itself, they're all original songs, they're all really well written. There's tons of harmonies and different challenges in the music, but specifically in the scenes, there is a very specific science to how a line is delivered and how someone delivers that line back, the spaces in between, the rhythms of the comedy. And that to me was the part that was so interesting. And we would sit there in the beginning when we were putting the show back up with the new cast, and Al Samuels would come in, and every line is very, you know, meticulously analyzed. What is the intention? I mean, you wouldn't think all of that in a musical parody,
mm-hmm.
but it is so important
exactly.
to how those laughs get delivered every night and the intensity of the show and the mm-hmm. levels.
Yeah, there's so much timing that goes into, you know, not only the verbal interaction, but the way you move around the stage. There's a scene where you talk about the long hallway and
uh-huh.
the pictures moving along.
Uh-huh.
That has to be done pretty with a lot of precision. Otherwise, you don't get the joke.
Yes.
You know, with this, you have people carrying photos, and you're supposed to be walking, and you're in place, and they're rotating the pictures.
Not an easy thing. Yeah. And a lot of clever things to stage. You know, it is a small theater, and that's the other challenge, which is wonderful about the show, is it really is the story and the script, the storyline, and the actors are the set. You know, it isn't a lavish set. It's a small theater, and it's a testament to how good the script is and the directing is.
Yeah.
To be able to pull off a show like that.
Your houses are between 100 and 200 people.
Yes.
It's a very tight audience. And you're right there with you guys. And there's a scene where there's an action performed in the audience that it reminds you of how close you really are.
Yes.
But you mentioned your cast. Let's make sure we mention everybody that is part of this thing. We mentioned the Mr. Mattingly.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant guy. Maren Wade. Got her. Sabrina.
Sabrina Sia.
We have Christine Hudman.
Yep.
In the regular cast. Philip Drennan.
Mm-hmm.
Philip's a great singer.
He's a great singer and actor. I mean,
he plays a role outside his culture.
He does. He plays a role, Jose, with an accent, and people come out every night asking, "Do you really have that accent?" They can't believe it when he starts speaking normally.
I was thrown knowing him personally, and then seeing him, develop that, having developed that on stage.
Yeah, you don't recognize him.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Adriana. Lomish. She's a part of the one of the three women female co-stars that you have.
Yes.
Who are we got? Chris Hodgson.
Uh-huh. Marlena Dunn.
And Romain.
Actually, Curtis Goodman just came back
Curtis
in.
Curtis Goodman,
who's also part of the original cast.
Curtis, I know. Yeah, he just moved over. So you got those two guys are always out on stage with their shirts off.
Yes, yeah. And they're gorgeous to look at.
I'll just say they're on stage with their shirts
off. So my job is so hard to look at them all day.
So that's the lineup, and a lot of these guys, all in male and female performers, have a lot of experience in Las Vegas. This is not the first rodeo for anybody on stage.
No, it's not.
And the room's busy. You guys are in there with the legend. You toggle time with Wayne Newton.
We do. I have to tell you.
That's going on.
I mean, you know Wayne, it is such a thrill for us, and he is the nicest man. Mm-hmm. And so he does his show right before us, and every time we are in the green room, we have this little green room area that's for the entire cast. He, of course, has his own dressing room. Mm. But in between his show and our show, he's always there, and he gives everyone a big hello and a big kiss, and he asks them how they're doing. And we've all been able to see his show now. And the most amazing thing that he does, and I told him he's created a monster with me, is when we go to see a show, he has us stand up and he says what show we're in at his show. You know, Wayne Newton is giving us shout outs.
Yep.
So I told him, I'm going to start coming all the time now to the show just so I can get that shout out.
You can have that audience. You can have the rollover audience. Yeah, his is at 7 o'clock. I had the opportunity. I know what you're talking about with Wayne, and I co-hosted with him one night over there. And if you can have a chance, folks, to see up close and personal, also in the Windows showroom, along with 50 Shades, see them both because they're uniquely entertaining.
Wayne, and they're very different.
Very different, but you come out of there knowing you've seen something, something unique. So it was worth your time.
Yeah.
Now we have we're connected elsewhere, Maren Wade.
Yes.
Pertaining to your column that you write in Las Vegas Weekly.
Yeah.
Confessions of a Showgirl.
Yes.
Now, in full disclosure, I edit this column each time out. Maren and I work together that way. It's never boring, ladies and gentlemen. I can tell you that. And I know the story, of course, but tell me about, or tell our audience about how you came to be a columnist. And this predates you being in this show by a while, right?
Yes, it does. Well, I guess what had happened, I started doing some guest columns, right?
Mm-hmm. You write for Robin.
Yes, I did a guest column for Robin that was very popular.
Robin Leach,
mm-hmm. called How to Close a Show in 10 Days. It was a satirical piece, but it hit a lot of people. And I'm not sure if... I don't know if some people knew it was satirical, but either way, it was one of those columns where it gained a lot of traction. And at the time, then I think I did the next year of it too, but I had come up with this idea where there are so many entertaining stories that happen in the life of a Vegas performer. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people use the term showgirl, and, you know, they use it for Jennifer Lopez as a showgirl and Celine Dion as a showgirl. And I realized, these showgirls that are stunning and gorgeous, and the ones you might see, like the Jubilee girls, who are amazing. And I realized there's a whole world of different types of Vegas showgirls out here. And wouldn't it be great to start telling all these funny stories of all of the things that can go wrong in shows, or just the kind of stuff that happens in the day-to-day life of a Vegas performer. And from there, it kind of took on a life of its own, and you obviously were instrumental in making all of that happen. I remember we had had a conversation, I had told you about it, and you thought, oh, I think this could be great for the weekly. And I remember the rest is history, and it's been a lot of fun, just all the different themes and
It's been an interesting arc of writing this column. One of the columns you wrote, I think it's the most recent as we sit here now, was you going back to New York and watching Paramore.
Yes,
because we didn't have a whole lot of people who were writing about Paramore. Nobody from Vegas had seen it, and you had been talking about it, and we came up with the idea maybe you should go ahead and write what you're telling me.
Why don't you just write it?
But is it difficult? This leads to the question. It was really expertly done. It was interesting to see somebody who's in the industry write about the industry. And, you know, that's always, especially that type of show back in New York, because it drew some praise, but it drew a lot of very barbed criticism back there in New York, who, you know, they don't take a liking to Cirque too much in the New York media.
Yeah.
What is it like for you to address some of the topics you address as a member of our entertainment community and family in print, and now you're on this side of the fence? Has there been a response for you on that?
It's very tricky because my intention always in my columns is to poke fun at things and to have fun and to never, my goal is never to offend. My goal is to really have people enjoy what I'm writing. And sometimes it does offend to certain people. And it always makes me feel bad because that's never my intention. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, it comes with the territory. You write, you're in public, people have opinions, they're going to voice them. And so I have definitely become better with it. I think at first it was a little difficult when mm-hmm. I would get, you know, a backlash of some sort that I definitely didn't intend to get, and I feel bad that people might be upset at certain things. But now, I respect people's opinions, and I also have to stay true to whatever it is that I'm trying to do too. And there will be people who like it, and then there will be people who don't.
That's it.
And so I just focus on the people who like it, and there, you know, I've gotten tons of wonderful responses from lots of people in the industry that are like, I love that you do this. It's so much fun. I tune into your columns every week. I want to hear what comes next. And I think that's really fun. But it is tough because on the one hand, you don't want to, because I do work in the industry, for example, like a show like Paramore, I make a joke in the most recent column that of Paramore that the storyline and the plot is a little weak, mm-hmm. but I want to preface that by saying I have no journalistic integrity, and that if Cirque ever were to hire me, I would take it all back. because
I'll be glad to star in a very thinly conceived musical on Broadway.
No, but here's the thing.
Where's the harness?
I do want to voice my opinion on Paramore because I watched it from a Vegas perspective, and obviously I'm not mm-hmm. a New Yorker.
Which you have to do. Let's be honest. You are a Las Vegas entity coming in there. You work in Las Vegas. There's nothing wrong with coming in with a Las Vegas perspective at all.
Well, I'm not well-versed on who the demographic is in the Broadway audience world, but I would imagine there are a lot of tourists. I don't think it's all just local New Yorkers that are busy going to Broadway shows.
I'd like to know that. It's different. It's a different audience, I think, than the people who visit Las Vegas.
It is definitely a different audience. However, there are tons of amazing musicals that are on Broadway. And what I did think was unique, it was a fun show. You watch the show and it's visually entertaining. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot to look at. And so I think, you know, the New York reviewers really focused on the traditional musical type styles of things. And I don't know. For me, it wasn't as important. And I did enjoy the show. But I don't think it needs to be getting the bashing that it's getting.
You know, I look at the coverage of Paramore. Have you seen Pippin?
No.
This is the show Pippin? Okay.
No, but I mean...
Pippin has a lot of acrobatics in it. And I haven't seen Paramore. But I'm wondering if, because it has that Cirque brand on it, that the media, the critics back there are already preconditioned.
Ready to pounce.
Yeah.
It felt,
Where Pippin, I don't think that was the case, and it has that kind of acrobatic impact, you know? It has a Cirque-type feel to it. I saw it here at the Smith Center. There's mm-hmm. not a whole lot of difference between Pippin and a Cirque show in many ways. But it was comparatively well-received by Broadway media.
Yeah, I mean, you might be right. I don't know.
I'm just thinking it through right now.
But I enjoyed it. And I watched it in preview, so I would imagine they made some changes. But but I enjoyed it. But most of all, as I wrote in my column, I enjoyed the street cred it gave me because I came back and everybody wanted to know how Paramore was. And I felt like a star.
That's part of the benefit of being in the media. I get that all the time. You know, like I saw The Who the other night and everybody wants to know how The Who was.
Oh, I know. You because, always get the...
But, you know, that's part of your charge.
So how was The Who?
It was better than Paramore.
You didn't see Paramore.
I'm guessing. No, the Who were great. I'm still recovering. My ears are still recovering from that show.
Oh.
To be honest. What's another column? I've wanted to, in your instance, Maren, that has gotten a particularly heavy response from you if you had to look over the past. It's been almost 2 years, right? In July that you've been writing
your
column.
Yeah, it'll be 2 years.
If you could pick an instance where there was a lot of response, a positive, negative, or other, a mix of the two that took you off guard, maybe.
Well, off guard. Well, there were two that
that you expected.
I wrote one recently called The Nutsack Diaries, and that got a pretty good response. And it was actually a story about something that went wrong on stage. I got a great response from that one, which is based on what happened at 50 Shades, the parody. And then I did another one. I'm trying to think of one that got another one was when your dreams come true but not for you. Don't know if you remember that one.
I remember this as an audition.
Yes.
Now I know the story and I know the column, but I'm trying to remember where the actual story and what was reported in the column stopped. Let's start with what was in the column.
The story is about the column was, and this is just a very real thing that happens as entertainers. You audition for shows and you're friends with a lot of the people that you perform with, and as you switch from show to show, you are sometimes having to compete against your friends, and this is a very heartfelt story written with a bottle of Jameson that that tells a story about every so often a dream job comes along, the stars align, and it happens to someone else.
Uh-huh. This did happen to
and
someone.
It did.
You were a finalist for a role in a show.
Yeah, in a show. And it was one of those things where you are so happy for your friend. You really are. But you can't help but feel sad because you were so close to getting something. And so it kind of goes through that whole journey of the audition process and then the finding out that, your friend gets it and you don't. And how you maneuver around it. And obviously I do it with a ton of humor and because sometimes you just, in this business, you do have to laugh about that stuff. You really do because you cannot ever take yourself too seriously.
Again, it's a different perspective of a process that we're familiar with on a certain level, auditions. But you don't often get to hear from the people who are involved in that process. It's very effective. That's what makes the column work. It's an under the carriage look at entertainment,
For
somebody who's an entertainer. And since that column was written, you're in a show now, in this show.
Show now.
So now you are part of that class, and it's always interesting to hear from you. We have got to close a curtain on this particular episode, Maren Wade, but I appreciate you coming down here.
Thanks again.
It's always a pleasure to interact with you, and regardless of whether we're doing a radio show or not. The show, folks, is 50 Shades the Parody. It's at Windows Showroom at Bally's. Just go up the escalators and make a left. That's where Tony and Tina's, Wayne Newton... Country Superstars has a spot there on occasion. Yeah, it's a busy room. This is nightly at 9:30, Dark Mondays. She plays the role of Anastasia Steele. It's Maren Wade, and find her in Las Vegas Weekly in Confessions of a Showgirl. And until we meet again, I thank you for coming down.
Thank you, Cass.